Welcome to the Igniting Souls podcast with Carrie Oberbrunner. Carrie believes if you want to experience clarity in business and in life, then discovering who you are, why you're here, and where you're going is a must. The Igniting Souls podcast is dedicated to help you do just this. And now, here's Carrie.
Listen, Jill, we're going to give away some gold today and teach.
Let's do it.
So what, first of all, are most businesses not thinking? Yes.
Businesses are just caught up in doing, and we love doing. We love to make sure that the actions are being taken and we're getting stuff done. But there's just so many times that I see when I'm working with my clients in the session room that we keep doing, and we don't take a step back to just think about what we're doing. Sometimes we've been doing things the same way over and over and over again, when really, if we just stop to think about it, we could make some improvements, save ourselves a whole lot of time, but we're just not doing enough thinking in companies. Well, I'm gonna rephrase that. The leadership team is doing a lot of thinking. And managers are doing a lot of thinking, but they're not delegating that thinking and really teaching the thinking to the whole organization as much as they could be. So hopefully the book helps everybody do that. Just even 1% more, and we'll make our world a better place.
Oh, I know it will. I know it will, because I've seen the book. It's fantastic. So why do people not trust their people to think?
I think a lot of times it's just habit. I think it's habit. I think it's personal expectations. When you take a leadership position, the first thing we think about, is how am I going to do this? How am I going to create results? And most leaders do. I think it's because we grew up that way. This is how we've climbed the ladder, if you will, by thinking our way into this, into these positions. So we've done that. We know how to do that. We know how to produce results. When we take a leadership team or a leadership position, we just take that old mindset with us, and we think we have to do everything ourselves. Mm. Of course, you know, what we learn when we run on EOS is we want to delegate so we can elevate. But a lot of us aren't thinking about delegating the thinking as well. And there's a whole bunch of reasons why that happens. But I think, first of all, it's just ingrained in our expectations that if we're the leader, we must do all the thinking.
Oh, that's so good. That's so good. Well, I have some notes here that I wrote down, because it is a fantastic book, and I wanted to serve everybody super well by getting the notes. But we're going to talk, first of all, talk about that cover, because I know we spent some time on the cover, but why did you say that cover is it? What does it symbolize? The people, the light bulb, the hands, all that stuff.
The cover for me was when I saw it, that's the one I said, that's it. It's absolutely that. And we, Carrie, you remember, we went through lots of different choices, but the one, this one that really spoke to me is because it's the hands, and it's the hands. It's all the doers. Right? It's all the doers in the world. Lots of different types of professions and skilled laborers and thought workers. It's just all of us together. But now we're having a thought, which is the shape of the light bulb. But we're all going in this together to really just have more of that thinking advantage. So I was really, really happy with your designers when they came up with this.
Well, I like it too, a lot. And I knew we nailed it with the cover. But let's talk about those four essential steps. So I know you're here on site with the team. First of all, let's give some promo to that team. What business are you with today?
Well, this was so fun, because we actually co-created this event together. We were in session, and this team is ThinkWhy. Let's hear it. So this is ThinkWhy, and I was coming out with the thinking advantage, and this is just a very, very creative team. And we just started co-creating and having all of these ideas. It's like, what if we do the launch right from your site. So I thought that, was really fun. So ThinkWhite is a very creative team. At the heart of who they are thinkers. And sometimes we say overthinkers. Okay. So that's where, where's Kramer? He's our favorite overthinker. There we go. Sometimes, you know, sometimes overthinkers, but they're just such talented thinkers. But they've created this amazing product that really helps the recruiting industry have actual facts about what people are being paid in different metro areas. And they're the, they are just have such a unique product that nobody else on the planet has. And it's helping other thinkers think better and make faster and more accurate decisions. So that's called Labor IQ, which again, I love because I love workers and I love thinkers, and that's what this team really supports. So it was just really serendipitous that I got to do the book launch here from ThinkWhite headquarters. So my friend Ron Jauncey is gonna come up here and join me.
That's fine.
Ron and I met at Strategic Coach. So this
I love Strategic
Coach. Another one here, Ron.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how we're not
going to. That's perfect. You're fine right there. You're
that's
fine
right there. And I especially love Ron being here today. Ron's the visionary of and he's worked with several companies on EOS. So this is really exciting to get to coach him here. But I really love Ron, especially for right now, because he was a test reader of the book.
Wow.
He was a test reader and gave me lots of good encouragement. And he just bought a whole stack for all of his friends. So, Ron,
that's Ron, cool.
You do that.
Well, because when I read the first version of the book, it was just, it struck a chord. We have so many people, outstanding people in our company, and we don't really take advantage of some of their, quote, thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, like she says in her book, somebody will say, it's not my job to think. I'm just here. I'm paid to just do X, Y, Z.
Oh, wow.
We need everybody in this company thinking about the big picture. How are we going to accelerate our growth? Mm. And let me tell you this. Jill is incredible. She has done so much to further the growth of our company over these past 2 years, 2.5 years that we've been working with her. And it's not just the EO system. This lady has so much energy, so much drive. She's inspirational. She helps us grow. And this book, oh my God, I'm going to give it to everybody I know. And because it can really change their lives and how they go about growing.
That is so good. I love it. So this is your trilogy. Now why, I love it. Why would people get the courage, the earning, and the thinking advantage? I mean, while you're shopping on Amazon, might as well get all three. But why do all three make sense?
Well, the first reason, and it's just kind of high level, that if anybody follows me, you probably have kind of figured this out by now. If you haven't, then here it is for you. But my whole body of work is really just around becoming better, just even 1%. So I'm not the kind of person, Carrie, who is going to wait my entire life to get something really, really perfect, 100%, and then publish it. Now, I do have some friends like that. They've been writing a book for 10 years. That's good for them. For me, it's an idea. It's a question that I have. Then I go explore it. I talk to some people. Is it true? Is it useful? And then I publish it. So all three of these are definitely focused around entrepreneurial companies and getting entrepreneurial companies to grow faster. I'm just really passionate about that. The first one, the earning advantage, is really a tool I created for bosses. And you know, when you're the boss and one of your employees or team members comes to you and asks for a raise, you immediately feel like frustrated, thrown off track. Do we even have budget for that? Now you're fearful. What if I don't give them a raise? They'll leave. And I just created that book, The Earning Advantage, to just hand to an employee when they ask for a raise. And you just say, I'm super excited. This is a great day. Go read the book and come talk to me. So that's just bringing people together. It's getting the employee and the business owner and the manager, the boss, on the same page. So that's that one. The Courage Advantage. Oh my gosh. When you are on an entrepreneurial leadership team, we are making decisions like crazy. that fear bubbles up almost every day, and especially 2020. Where's my dumpster fire? We're 2020. Especially in 2020 when we don't know what's around the corner. Look at this. Check her out. She's just a dumpster fire.
I love that.
We feel like, and it was way before 2020, did we think at any moment in these entrepreneurial companies, things could be a dumpster fire. So this fear bubbles up almost daily. And what I discovered is that those companies who can be really courageous and just daily make tiny little courageous decisions, again, just 1%, if that's it, they can really just start to move their company forward faster. So that's a little bit about the other two books. Carrie, I always think it's really cool whenever I launch a new book, mm-hmm. The old book sells some more copies.
Yes.
I haven't even talked about that book for a while.
Yes. I love it.
I don't know why. You probably know why. I don't know why, but.
Well, it's all good. I mean, books do that. Books bring a spotlight on your entire business. And I think that's why some people are nervous to publish books, because they're like, ooh, not everything's perfect. But you drink your own medicine, meaning you.
Sheesh.
Step in the fear,
yeah.
And do it anyway.
Yeah.
So let's jump in and let's talk about some of these steps. What's one of the steps that people could take?
Well, I always like to, you know, you just mentioned a little bit about authors and like maybe why people don't publish books. So I just want to give you a little context of where this came from. So yes, Ron gave a little summary of the preamble of the book, just where, you know, there really was a situation where somebody said, it sounds like you're asking me to think and I don't get paid to think.
Whoa.
Like, yeah. It just hit me at like the depth of my core as, oh my gosh, that's just,
But let's talk about where that come from.
Yeah.
Because Ron's an amazing guy, but there's some bosses that probably have told people in the past, I don't pay you to think, shut up, you know, and that's horrible.
Right.
But is that where it comes from?
It surely might come from that. What I love about what Ron did, and you know, I'm a coach, so I'm always observing what he's saying and how he's saying it. So maybe you guys caught this, maybe it was just me. But what he said is that he is taking responsibility for that. He is saying, and he and I had a little discussion beforehand too, is that if somebody says, I don't get paid to think, well, then whose problem is that? And Carrie, you just kind of said it too. You get, you know, I coach you too, Carrie. So
yeah,
I'm also watching your words.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the big point. Ron said, and it's in the preamble of the book, if somebody says, I don't get paid enough to think, well, then what's our job as leaders? Well, let's teach them how to think.
So it's our fault.
Is our problem. In fact, with all of my leadership teams, one of the first things we do is we say, we look at each other and really say, if there's any dysfunction going on, anything slow, anything stuck, any wrong people in the wrong seat, it's like, whose fault is it? Well, it's our fault. We take responsibility. So the book, I know you asked about the four steps, is really giving a pattern, I like to call them algorithms, giving an algorithm to leadership teams of entrepreneurial companies of how you can take responsibility for this. Mm. And really, it's looking at how your company thinks about their people and how they think about their thinking. So with that said, I'll go into a quick summary of the four points. But the four points were really discovered, and they were discovered over probably about a 6-year time span. I do a workshop called the Accountability Activator. Those have been put on hold for now. But in this Accountability Activator, I taught several accountability tools. And over the course of 2 or 3 years, I started to work with the tools. And I started to say, well, this tool is really working and this tool is just kind of not really working. So just really being a business scientist and seeing what works. And at the end of every workshop, I would say, what was most valuable to you? Mm-hmm. And then again, the way I do my workshops is a month later, I check in and I say, what are you still using? Because mm-hmm. super valuable that day, but if they're not using it 30 days later, I'm like, eh, there was something I did taking responsibility that didn't let it stick. So this book is a culmination of one of those tools in Accountability Activator. Hmm. At first I called it the Swiss Army Knife of LMA. And then there was something about a river. I really worked with the names on here, but really these four steps now are just baked into the Thinking Advantage. So I just want everybody to know that, because I didn't just make it up overnight and plop it into a book. It really was a 6-year process.
Wow, I love it. So this has been live from the field.
Yes. Yes. From the field. That's the only way I know how to learn, is by actually doing it and iterating.
But you really have to be a confident and secure leader to let your team think. I mean, let's be honest. There's a lot of people who are egocentric who think, I got to have it all together. I got to say everything right. That's pretty insecure leader. Why do you think only certain leaders make the cut?
So this is interesting that you asked this, because I've actually been asking myself the same question. I don't know, pop out into a book at some point. I also coach other coaches, and coaches need to be leaders. We're not bosses, but we're coaches. So there's all kinds of different leadership. And part of the book goes into that. You can use the Thinking Advantage even with people you don't have a specific title authority.
Sure.
With. Okay. But I think what's happening is people who are really great leaders have done their own personal work.
So let's jump in, and I have some questions for you.
All right.
Why are you so passionate about coaching?
Oh, how long do we have?
I'm
a simplifier. I can make it short. We're at the very core, I think we're all here to help other people. To help other people do something, just to serve other people. That's where I find my deepest joy. And when I help other people help other people, whether it's through selling a product or selling a service or growing a company, ThinkWhy is really big here about they're people inspired. People first, like people inspires everything. So we're helpers. So I'm just really, really passionate about that. And then I've had lots of coaching training. I've read the books. I am a coach. So that's good that I've had training.
Right.
I'm a coach. But as I look at all of that, what I just boil it down to is coaching is just simply helping people become their best.
Mm.
So helping people is great. Help people. That's awesome. It's kind of at maybe in our core, in our spirit, to just want to be helpful people in general on the planet. But then when you're a coach, you get to help people be their best. And how satisfying is that? So I really, in the book, part of the book, and when I do speaking engagements on this, it's often around the topic of coaching. And what I love to do is take everything that I know, or at least some parts of it, because some stuff I don't even know what I don't know, and teach everybody some coaching skills, teach everybody how to be a coach.
So your philosophy is that really everybody in a company should be a thinker, a coach, and then someone else said a leader.
Yeah. Why not? There's another just phenomenon that's happening right now, and it's been happening probably for the last 10 or 15 years, is that where knowledge is dispersed. So if you kind of go back to the old style management, old style structures of company, you had the boss at the top, wearing the suit, isolated, and most of the time it was his office, right?
Yeah.
Isolated there and kind of telling everybody what to do and making all the decisions. Well, information and education is just so dispersed now, and we're learning new stuff all the time, that the knowledge is everywhere in the company. So how can the boss, just like Claudine said, I don't know everything. I have to delegate the leadership too. How can the boss know everything? It's impossible. There's pockets of knowledge everywhere in the company. But we got to extract that knowledge. We got to extract that thinking. If you have a thinking partner, if you have a coach to talk about something with, co-create, who's not your boss, awesome.
Awesome. I love it.
So the Thinking Advantage is designed into four steps. that you really need in your company in order to create this thinking advantage in your company. And the first step, as most first steps are, it sounds really basic and it kind of sounds silly, but it's the most important step, and it's teach. We must become companies who are just really good at teaching people, teaching our, this is crazy, teaching our clients. Yes. Teaching our clients, like, this is how you use the product. Teaching each other, teaching our new hires. We just need to become a really great company full of teachers. And this section goes through how adults love to learn. So there's some good insights on that. A lot of us, when we say, oh, I need to teach somebody this, we just go right back to elementary school. And we think, ah, I've got to be the teacher, so I'm going to talk at you all day long, and you will be the student, and you write it down and regurgitate information. Well, that's not actually teaching people to think. So there's some really great elements of adult learning that are right there in that chapter. And the reason it's so important is because the next step that we go to, coach, is just very, very difficult, and it's time consuming, and bosses and mentors will just hate this step if you don't do really good coaching. So you think about teaching as just getting everybody the textbook or school-like. They need the basic information. When I was president of a CPA firm, I remember having interviews with people. I'm like, okay, you know how to use QuickBooks? Yep. You know what a financial statement is? Yep. All right, you're hired, and here's your login. And you know how to use QuickBooks, so there you go. And it was just very little teaching, because I just thought they knew how to do it. And they did know how to do their craft, but they didn't know the way we did it. So then what would happen is I would just have questions minute after minute after minute. How do you use the printer?
Sure.
What do we use? Where do I get this? And it was just exhausting to just, what I was really doing is just kind of jumping into coaching, which wasn't really even coaching at all. It was just telling people what to do.
Yes.
Invest in really great teaching, and then the coaching becomes fun. So if teaching is that you go ahead and teach all the science, right, all the basics and the rules, then the coaching gets to be the art, and you get to have conversations around the exceptions. You're asking deep questions, and this is where the thinking really starts to engage, is when you really engage in coaching. So teaching and coaching, two really great first steps.
Yeah. Well, and I love the fact that you said in the beginning, I'm not paid to think, that some people use as an excuse. I think another reason why they say that is because they don't want to own the results. You know what I'm saying? Like, in other words, if you just tell me what to do, then I don't have to blame myself if it doesn't work. Have you ever run into that?
Well, for sure. And this is, we find this happening in entrepreneurial companies a lot, especially when they're hitting the ceiling and they say, ah, I got to do something else. That's usually when they engage with me, we run on EOS. But really the core of that, where people don't want to take responsibility, is just really unclear expectations. So really this starts again back with the leader taking responsibility. Does the leader even know where they are going?
Interesting.
Or even know what they're expecting. So again, you know, thinking at all levels to make sure we're all on the same page with that. And then here's the miracle of this. Once you really start coaching somebody and asking them a deep question and then just being quiet as their coach, their brain cells turn on automatically. It's our natural state. We want to think. We've probably been conditioned not to in some situations. So there's lots of good ideas right there in the book where leaders can take responsibility for just activating brain cells in everybody instead of just, you know, dialing it in. Yep. That's, and wanting so people to do.
That's so good. Well, I don't know if you know this, but maybe you do, but the word amuse means to not think.
Oh.
So A is not. Muse, you know, is think. So I mean, so we've been like a society that is told to be amused, and that's it, you know.
Carrie, I'll even admit to that. You know, I wrote the book on thinking, so, and I'm a thinker. I love it. I thrive in it. You know, you and I love to co-create things. I co-create with this team here at Think Why. I love it. I'm passionate about it. But when, if I'm going to take some time off, guess what I want to do?
Think.
I want to be amused. No.
Oh, okay.
I want to laugh.
And then you just don't want. Yes. No, that makes tons of sense.
So when you, so if somebody says, let's go to this intense movie, or if I read a book for pleasure, I'm like, no. I want to laugh. I want to laugh. Let me laugh.
That's good.
Thinking I need some relief.
No, that makes a ton of sense. That makes a ton of sense. And it probably, as weird as it sounds, this little confession, but like our leaves are falling a ton right now in Ohio. Yeah. And I'm actually looking forward to driving the tractor, bagging the leaves. Why? Because like the brain's been going so much with the conference and the book launch. So I totally get what you're saying. This is why people like exercising even sometimes just to. Okay. Makes sense. You as a leader have to create a safe space because a lot of us have been wounded in childhood where it's like school for some of us was not this healthy place. We were told you don't measure up or you don't get the good grades or you don't think well. So for some people, telling them to be, you start thinking is really kind of like painful. Would you agree?
I do. And a couple of things, if there's bosses listening to this, and you're thinking, how do I do this? Two quick things to keep in mind. Silence is uncomfortable, but it's also the very best and easiest thing you can do as a boss to create a safe space. Just be with the person in silence. And again, our brains start thinking. And Carrie, your book, Unhackable, that just came out last week, that's actually teaching us how to create that space in our brains so that we're not hacked, we're not distracted, we're not taken off track. But that safe space can be created with just 2 minutes of silence. And your brain will tell you what it's thinking. But we just don't have that. And then the second key point to keep in mind to create those safe spaces. So silence is one. The second one is repetition. If you do that once with somebody that you're coaching, and this, again, the coaching part of the thinking advantage can happen with anybody. You do that once and they might not respond. But you do that again, you create a safe, silent space for them to think. Then they start to catch on. And I'm just a big fan of third time's the charm. By the third time you create that safe thinking space, ideas start to come out. When you really listen, then they're not threatened.
I also feel that when you are a boss, admitting that you don't know all the answers is huge.
Yes.
Right? Like in other words, to say in a meeting or an L10, and if you don't know what an L10 is, I love those, but Jill's our EOS coach, and I couldn't imagine life without Jill through the pandemic because you helped us. I tell the story. Our first gathering was March 13th, and literally Saturday we're flying out and like COVID is happening.
Yeah.
We were the last flight out. And yet you helped us with our core values. And even back to that 2 day that you had with us, I didn't know all the answers. And I'm quote the visionary. So Ron, I get you, man. I get you. But you know, to say in some meetings, I don't know what our core values are. I think it then allows other people, other teammates to then fill in the space, as opposed to a leader who acts like they have it all together. What do you think?
Sure. So I don't know is a good one because you say I don't know, then it kind of puts a little bit of pressure on the people around you to think, oh, well, if he doesn't know, then I got to know. And it turns on those brain cells. The other one is I was wrong.
Ooh, that's even tougher.
I was wrong.
That's
because when I'm wrong, that makes a safe space for you to be wrong also. So I'm going to debunk a myth right here. Some bosses out there are going to go, oh, no, I've been doing that for years. And that's okay because today is the first day that you can stop doing this.
Yes.
Some bosses tell their people, erroneously. So don't do this. Ready, everybody? Don't do this. Write this down and then scratch it out. Some people, some bosses tell their people, if you come to me with a complaint, you must come to me with a solution. What that does in the thinking person's brain is, listen, I can see that there's something wrong. I don't know how to fix it. That's how I am coming to you. But now you've just shut me down from coming to you. You've just shut me down and you place pressure on me. If you've said this to me, you place pressure on me to coming up with the right answer. Oh my gosh, in my isolated brain, how can I come up with the solution to this scene? That's a ton of pressure. I can't do that. But if bosses instead will say, if you come to me with a problem or an issue, will you also come to me with some ideas? Ideas. If you're listening to this and you're an employee and you have a boss and you have ideas, your boss wants them. If you don't think your boss wants them, try it three times. Again, you got to try three times. Hey, boss, I have some ideas that might help us fix this. Would this be helpful? So stop asking your people to come to you with solutions. Ask them to come to you with ideas.
I'm picking a theme here, and it's culture. So maybe you got to have the culture advantage coming out next.
That's great. But listen, if there's anybody to write the book on the culture advantage, it's this team here. Woo-hoo! I'll write the foreword, and it's this team here. They're doing everything they can, taking really good responsibility for just a high, a really strong culture. So,
well, I'm sensing there's fun in the room. You know, we had people comment that the energy in the room, who does that? I mean, most places in corporate America around the world, they're not fun. They wouldn't take a break. They wouldn't dress up in the costume. They wouldn't allow people to stand up on stage here in live stream. But you're blending thinking with fun. And how do those two coexist?
Well, Carrie, it's actually I want to say it's a requirement, but that's a little bit of a bold move, because there's many times I just get very contemplative and thoughts come to me and I'm nice and clear and quiet. But especially in a group, and especially when you're trying to think of ideas and you have this big question, how can we make $1 billion? How can we serve 1,000 clients? Then that's when you really need, well, fun and celebration. And there's lots of scientists who have studied this too, where it actually increases your thinking ability. What would be a fun way to solve this horrible customer service issue? What would be a fun way to make our clients smile? So when you add that, it actually helps you think. It's actually part of the courage mindset in the Courage Advantage. It's one of the three things I found in teams that just really moved forward almost effortlessly with the tools. They had the courage to lighten up. So
I love it. I love it.
See it working. So let's do it.
I have to weave in one of my favorite movies because Dead Poets Society.
Yes.
Love it.
You write a lot about, not a lot, but you reference that in your book.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I love Dead Poets Society because you look at Robin Williams in that movie. He was a massive thinker as a teacher, but they also had a ton of fun. In other words, you almost have to be unorthodox.
Yeah.
And he didn't fit the mold, neither did his students. But to me, that's kind of what you're doing with EOS and your teams. And give us the link to your people in the room, because I've heard you say their name a few times. What is their website?
Yeah, you guys check this website out too, and check out everything that they're doing, because it's amazing. Their product is amazing. And remember, that's a lot for recruiters, but their culture is amazing. In fact, I'm going to just share a little secret. So the website is www.thinkwhy.com, all one word.
W-H-Y.
Yep, W-H-Y, think and the word why. But one of our very first sessions is, I think it was Claudine who said it. So I think it's Claudine. It could have been somebody else. But she said, if we're going to create a tool that is people inspired and we're going to be selling it, one of our highest priorities has to be to have a great culture internally. We cannot have a crap culture and then you know, preach culture to the rest of the world.
Ooh, that's good.
I know we think about that every single time we meet in the room. But yeah, check out their culture. They're putting lots of fun stuff out there, but also, like, again, they're like the smartest people I coach. Sometimes they're talking about words and I'm like, I don't know. We call it clackety clack when Jill doesn't know what the techie words they're using.
I gotcha.
Clackety clack, but are you sure you want to do that? And they say, uh-huh, and I write it on the board.
There you go. I love the fun here. And Yovina is putting it up on the screen, thinkwhy.com. So now there's going to be a ton of people checking out the company.
Awesome.
Well, listen, as we kind of land the plane today, we have talked about quite a few of the inside secrets, but what is that number four? Because some
people are tight. So we also didn't talk about number three. So I'll just do that real quick. So
yes.
Coach, the third step in this algorithm is don't rescue. So remember I said it's just kind of ingrained in us to want to help people. Well, when you're really trying to have the thinking advantage, what people really need in order to think is they need their own experiences. So if you've taught them how to do something and you've coached them how to do something, then what we want to do as bosses is we want to say, well, now I've taught you and coached you, but just this once, I'm going to do this thing for you. And we want to do them. Let me talk to the customer that's irritated. Let me handle that big negotiation.
Guilty.
That's right. That's right. He's self-proclaimed.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. What we're doing is we're initiating the thinking. And then as soon as we grab that task from somebody, we shut it right down again.
Wow.
So we're giving our people a taste of thinking. And then when we rescue, we shut it right down.
Listen, I struggle with that because I'm a helper. I'm a doer. But you're right. You it's almost like you create, and no shame on anybody here, but it's almost like you create the 35-year-old who lives in your basement and doesn't have a job when you do that, because you're not teaching them to grow up. And by the way, if you're 35 and in your basement, it's all good. I love you. Okay.
That's right. I'd like to live in my mom's basement, and I'm 45.
There you go. There you go.
Nice. She just cooks dinner every night.
Yeah. But hey, Jill's mom. But the point is, you're not raising your people up.
That's right. And Carrie, you said I'm a helper, I'm a giver. And sometimes I find with those leaders who are just so servant hearted that they actually feel bad being their employees make that hard call on their own the first time. And there's a really fun story I tell in the book about the day I let my son drown.
Whoa.
He calls it the day mom let me drown. But I knew what I was doing. Read the story. I'll even maybe say it in a video because it's so funny. But yeah. I could see ahead. I could see that he was not in harm's way, but he couldn't. So we as bosses feel like I'm gonna let this person fly on their own, and they're nervous. Of course they're nervous.
Mm.
They can't see ahead, but bosses can see ahead a little bit more. And as I didn't rescue Tyler, he was just fine. And he learned some things. So make sure we're not rescuing. That's the third step.
That's
and
awesome.
If you are rescuing, there's a kind of a super secret speakeasy tool for you on those times when you really have to rescue. Because mm-hmm. if Tyler was really in danger, I would have jumped right into that dam and pulled him out.
Yeah.
Here's the fourth step then. And the fourth step, so similar to the first step that was so basic and you just have to do it. This fourth step, very easy. But if you don't do it, you lose all of the effort of the first three steps.
Mm.
So the last step is return and reflect. And just like humans need some silence in order to get their brain going, humans also need to, in order to get 1% better, we need to talk about what we just experienced. So as a boss, you've taught, you've coached, you didn't rescue, you didn't pull them out of the river. But then once they get out of the river and you're drying them off, then you just say, how did it go? What did you learn? What do you think you'll do different next time? What do you want to keep for the following time? And your only job right there is to just, again, just kind of be quiet and listen to them talk. And what happens in our brains is when we talk about something, our brain tags that memory as important. Mm. It's important. So as we sleep every night and our brain cells, they shrink microscopically and this glimpse stuff like washes your brain. That's like a true brainwashing. It won't take those really important lessons and wash them away. It says, ah, that thing's got to stick. Then the next time you're in that situation, you probably won't need to go to your boss very much. Because when you think back and you say, where did I learn that? I learned it right here. It's already there. I'm not the authority or the learning or the direction on the boss. So this is a really great algorithm. And even if you can just do, just even from listening to this launch here, if you can just do 1% better in each one of those four steps, you're going to start creating this thinking advantage in your companies.
We'll put in your website as well, tractionfirst.com.
Tractionfirst.com, links to all of the books there. And if you have a question or you just need to chat, I'm also open to that as well.
Awesome.
Happy to see everybody.
Take care, Jill. We'll see ya.
All right. Thanks a bunch, Carrie.
All right. Bye. All right.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks so much for listening to the Igniting Souls podcast. As a subscriber, we challenge you to be more than just a passive listener. Show up, build up, and become a member of the tribe. Visit us on the web at carrieoberbrenner.com. Remember, the most powerful weapon on earth is the human soul on fire.